Well, first, my name is Christian Carlson. I'm the Director of State and Local Government Sales for ESRI. And with me is Scott Ottman, and he leads our solutions effort for local government. So Scott lives in Detroit. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been with ESRI for 21 years. Scott has been with us for, what,
eight or ten?
But those are ESRI years, so it's like 25 regular years. Let me do some quick, ask a couple of questions. How many of you, this is your first user conference?
Wow.
All right. That's amazing. How many of you have seen Scott and I give this presentation before? A couple. Okay, so you'll see some common things, but then you also see some new stuff in the presentation. And if this is too annoying because of the way it's I'm tethered, then I'm gonna kill it. And we'll be fine because I got a loud voice. Okay. How many people here are from county government? Wow.
That's good.
City? Regional? Anybody from state? A couple from state. We have a state session next door. It's the same presentation with different apps.
Next.
For state apps.
It's not right now.
Not right now, but stay. We really don't mind interactive. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have to be a sterile, it's definitely not a corporate type sterile presentation. We're going to go over some content, ask questions in the middle, ask questions at the end. Just feel free to put your hand up, or you don't even have to put your hand up. We're that casual. So just keep it interactive. That'll be fun. So our agenda here is pretty simple. What I'm going to do, I like to provide. So sort of a thing that Scott and I've talked about for years is that typically there can be technical innovation or new programs that are put together that are delivered to our customer base, and they're just sort of launched and they're not explained. Like, why are we doing this? What are the trends that are impacting them? They just sort of land on you. I'm just sort of a stickler for saying, hey, look, here's the background of what we're trying to accomplish and what we're doing, and hopefully that'll add some context for you so you can understand what we're doing and put it into your sort of frame of reference. So I'll do that first. We'll tell you a little bit about, we'll describe what ArcGIS for Local Government is in concept, and then we'll actually show you an example. So bottom line, we've created a series of what we consider to be very common initial operating capabilities that every government should have as part of their GIS. We have over 150 of those apps, and we're building more and more and more that we're deploying and giving away with the platform for you to configure and use. Rather than go from, rather than show you 10 or 15 apps that span the entire governmental structure, like planning, land records, public safety, whatever it might be, we'll drill into one area and show you how we've architected the apps so that they go through a very specific workflow. So if you're trying to accomplish something, whether it's an elections solution, it's not one app, it's a series of apps that do different things. And so Scott will drill in, but you have the flexibility. You can go off and show anything that you want. So I hate to do this, but this really helps the presentation, and it helps sort of the dialogue. How many people here are pure GIS? You're like in the GIS department of your organization. Okay, how many people here are public works? Public safety? Okay, planning? Econ dev? Wow, all right, good. All right. Okay. Anything else anybody wants to shout out that you do that I didn't call out? Land records, I forgot. I meant to say that. That's like one of the key ones. That's it. Right, you're on the front row, too. Okay. All right. So then we'll show you what we're going to do next, like what's coming, and then feedback can come all along. So the way I like to start this is to just describe what our mission is as an organization. You got some of this in the plenary yesterday, but I'm going to tie it down to very specifically state and local, right? So for the most part, we are GIS professionals, geographers on my side, who are tasked or missioned with taking the geographic sciences and applying them to government. Our objective, like what's underneath, like our mission and our vision is to connect the value of maps and geography with government workflows so that they support efficiency, better decision-making, and ultimately the creation of better communities. That's what we're about. We're trying to play our part in supporting your mission of creating great places for us to work, live, and play. A concept that sort of bubbled up in my mind over the past couple of years is this notion that government is organized by department or by domain. So you should recognize these. Land records is first on this list. So land records, public works, planning, econ dev, environment, you go ahead and build them out. But it's organized departmentally. Within each of these domains are very specific workflows that you would execute your land records management process or your workflow. We have worked with customers like yourself to understand and deploy solutions that fit those workflows, right? This works when you look, when we go and we meet with the public works department, or if there's a public works SIG at the user conference, they'll talk about the way that GIS supports the work that you do and how it creates efficiencies, drives better decision making, and all those things that are inherent to GIS. The concept that can be a little bit different is something that I like to sort of launch, is that government's organized by department, but that's not the way we live. We actually live in a very different space, where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, you live wherever you live, and you would say, look, I think of my community, like the characteristics that I want my community to achieve are, I want it to be vibrant, I want it to be livable, I want it to be safe, I want it to be healthy. And these are characteristics of the places that we live that we're all striving for. And what's unique about these characteristics, in my mind, is that in order to be livable, for example, it requires integration and work and collaboration horizontally across all those departments. You understand what I mean? So you're pulling from, you know, each of those departments in order to sort of achieve these characteristics, right? So if we just pick one like livable may include affordable housing or making sure that things are, you know, affordable and equity in your community, adequate and sufficient transportation infrastructure, right? And you'll hopefully you'll be able to reach back into this presentation in a minute when I share something else with you that sort of addresses the challenge in accomplishing this stuff. We want to be able to achieve and maintain some sort of sustainable smart growth strategy, so as populations increase and as the dynamics of our communities change, we're able to actually plan for how we're going to grow. We want to make sure that our communities have diverse professional opportunities. You know, so one of the things for being a sustainable and livable community is that you're not just a healthcare city or county, you're not just a financial city or county, but you have a diverse economy that provides opportunity for people who live there. And then lastly, there are things that you do to preserve green space, open space, green infrastructure to make it healthy. Again, these are just off the top of my head a couple of things. There's more there. There's different characteristics that you can throw onto this list. But the notion I'm trying to get at is that to achieve these things, it's a horizontal integration. And what's really cool about what we do as a profession and what you do as a profession is that GIS is a connecting glue there, right? So as we sort of build out these apps and things, we sort of think about this. And one of the challenges that, like when I, you know, when I sit back and think, okay, well, you know, what are some things that we really want to have help support within this community? It's really enabling GIS professionals like yourself, people with GIS tradecraft, to be able to do really interesting things with the technology that require analysis and the unique capabilities of GIS to deliver. So not just a finder application where you can find a park. We'll show you those as part of our solution. But actually applying your geographic knowledge to be able to do walkability scores, to understand how you can address obesity, childhood obesity in your area, how you can do predictive policing, things that really take spatial analysis and the tradecraft that you have. We want to free you up to be able to do that work is one of the major things that we want to do, right? So doing this stuff requires more than technology. I just want to say that before we get into it. We're going to throw some tech on you and show you what we have. To really make it happen requires a lot of other things. You're not unfamiliar with this, right? It requires political leadership. It requires the leadership in your organization to understand the capabilities of GIS. It requires you as GIS professionals to be able to communicate with those people. You have to hire well. You have to attract talent. You have to do all those things, right? And it's, I just said that. It makes it seem like it's insurmountable. It's like an unachievable thing. I didn't mean to do that. But I'm just saying it's not just about technology. It's a lot of different things. And so one of the other things that we're trying to do is to make sure that we can give you some solutions by domain that make it easier for you to connect the value of GIS, right, the value of what you know, to the actual workflows of the organization. Does that make sense? Does that make sense, Scott?
Yeah.
Okay. So this next part, if you just bear with me for a second, I find this to be interesting. It's something that, it's a way that I really think about government, and I think about the technology shift that is happening today in government. And I just, again, these are some of my thoughts that sort of get into what we're doing. I violate every rule in a presentation. Like, so you only should have three things, and you should have it. Okay, I got six. I started, it was like nine, and I boiled it down to six. I got six transformational trends in government. This is a whole presentation in unto itself. I'm going to focus in on two of the trends as being two that I want to focus on in our limited time today. But the number one, and they're not in any order of significance. So I'm going to say number one is just the first thing I'm going to mention, is that there are two major demographic shifts that are happening right now that are impacting government. Number one is that people globally are moving to cities. We're seeing rural populations decline, urban populations go up. Why is that important? That's important because as our cities grow, things like smart growth, transportation, infrastructure to support them, your ability to deliver service delivery as your population goes up is a stressor, right? The second demographic shift is that we have an aging workforce, and it cuts across the entire workforce, and government's not immune. So there you see the articles all the time. There was one last week, I think you sent it to me, Scott, from Governing Magazine. The silver tsunami is upon us. There's a large number of people that are at or nearing retirement age, and so that just is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, government is basically run on old information technology. Everybody agree with that for the most part? So we're going to talk about that in detail in a minute. Mm-hmm. Number two, those aging systems need to be replaced. And at the time that they're being replaced, which is right now, is at a time of dramatic and something that we've never seen before, rapid technology innovation. So all of these things are webbed together. So like they're not independent. We're going to go back to those two. Number four, it's finally accepted that what you do in the land records organization in your county, and what he does as a land records organization in his county, they're the same. Mm-hmm. You may do one thing that's different than she does, but you both do five of the same things. So this identifying and accepting that public safety is the same everywhere. Public works is the same everywhere. This sort of standardization of workflows and business process is widely understood, right? So what you do is not unique, right? Number five, maps are hot right now. And it's going to continue. They're going to continue to be hot. This bodes well for you, right? It is the favored way to communicate. And that, again, that can almost be an entire presentation in and of itself. But it organizes data into a geographic framework. It gives context to data. I actually feel like one of the things that it does that we never hear talked about is that I think it personalizes data. So, you know, if crime goes up or down, what do? You actually want to go see what that means to you based on your address. If you manage a public works department and service delivery is up or down, you want to see where it's up or down. You understand what I mean. It personalizes data, and I think it's a very important thing. Number six, the sixth thing is that there's a challenge for everybody, public and private, in attracting and retaining talent. And there's a lot of different things there. But these web together, like how do you attract talent? So they all stick together. I'm not going to drill into number six, but what I would say is a deciding factor in young professionals looking for work is whether they will be exposed and be able to use and take advantage of the new technology of the day. So web these together. Governments run on old business systems. We have a demographic shift. You need to hire new people. They're going to be looking to come in and using the technology of the day to build their skills and be competitive. So again, these six things are webbed together. The two that I want to focus on are replacing legacy business systems and rapid technology advances. And so let's just go here. I use a Jenga pile as my my analogy. I was with a customer several years ago, and it just dawned on me. We were sitting around the table, and they had their staff around the oval table, and it was like everybody's introducing, and it was like, my name is Joe and I maintain the AS400, and it was my name is Mary, and I make sure the data can go into the AS400, and the next person, it went around, and it was everyone's role and responsibility was uniquely tied to a highly customized legacy business system that they had to maintain, and it worked until it didn't. Their ability to ingest new technology as it was released was dictated by this old system. Their ability to create new applications that their user community wanted was constricted by the same thing. You get the picture. Does anybody here have this experience? Anybody? Right. So they're hard to maintain. They're not this notion of sustainability. This is something I hear from CIOs all the time now. If you mention sustainability, they're like eyes perk up. They're like, I need to figure out how to make my information system sustainable. I can't rely on third parties all the time. I can't have the knowledge of how to manage these systems tied up in one or two people in the organization. They've got to be standards-based. These older systems are hard to find skilled support. The cost of ownership is high. A big thing is that they provide capabilities that are based on the technology of the day that they were implemented. So it's hard for them to support the mobile workforce, which is major. It's hard for them to support three clicks or less, which is a common understanding that the way that we want to have access to data. They don't support necessarily 24/7 remote access. There's a lot of different things that they don't do that sort of align with the expectations of the knowledge worker today. And I mentioned that they were tied to third parties and individuals for support. So this is an issue that we recognize. One thing I left off of this is this notion that because they're highly customized, because of the technology, I mean, most of you, we had the same thing. We deployed what we called a generic GIS system. You guys took it and customized it to meet your needs. We come out with a new release, you'd have to rebuild the apps. You couldn't do that all the time, so you get into this rev lock scenario. So you couldn't keep up with the technology. Totally noticed. So, and again, what I'm building here is an explanation of what we're doing and why we're doing it. All right, did you have a question?
Yeah. I want to know, like, why should we change a system which is working and which is like we are spending a lot of money, then we should hire new tech people, and then we are spending the same thing. Like, a system is working and it's been,
right, totally, and that's a very common thing.
That's the main reason why people don't move to, like.
Right. So here's what I would say. Why would I move? First of all, you may not need to. But here are the things that are driving people to move. Number one, and I'll put this into our context. I ran into a customer 2 years ago that had an Arc Info workstation on a Sun Spark station, right? Sun Spark, using Arc Storm, as right. When they have tech support issue, there is nobody that can answer that question. So we have a support issue, number one. Number two, the people that run that system in that organization, when they decide to leave or go somewhere else or retire, they're never going to be able to hire anybody in to maintain that system because it's technology that's 15 years old, right? That's two. Number three, what we're finding in a lot of these systems is that when you go generically, that they just simply don't have the capabilities, depending on the business system. So let's say it was a 3-1-1 system, that the users of, I don't know how to say, not necessarily users of the system, but the people that would benefit from the system you're not delivering the capabilities of today. So like if when I think about like reporting a 3-1-1 situation or calling about something, I want to do it from my mobile phone, right? Or I want you to proactively call me and tell me that there's a rabid dog in my neighborhood on the reverse. You understand what I mean? Those capabilities may not be present in the old system. I don't know what your situation is. But I'm speaking in generic terms. But those are some of the reasons, right? And you may not need to. And you prioritize. The job is to prioritize what you need to upgrade and modernize, and what you don't. So at the time that these legacy systems exist, there are some major trends that are happening. So this is, I did not make this up. This is from McKinsey. They identified the top areas of innovation in technology. I just picked the top five again. I was trying to do something right in a presentation. But my point here is that every single platform company on the planet is building technology that takes advantage of these areas of innovation. So when we go to WebGIS or we have a named user model, Why is Esri doing that to me? It is harvesting and taking advantage of the trends that are happening in information technology globally, right? This is what everyone is doing. So all of those business systems that you replace are going to harvest the same capability. So what are they? It's the mobile internet. It's the protocols of the internet. 24/7 access. All the things that you know that have disrupted business today. It's the mobile internet. Number two, the automation of knowledge work. It is just a fact that things that were difficult, that took very specific domain expertise, whether it's statistics or spatial analysis, or those things are being collapsed and automated so that they can provide access and usability to a broader range of people. I met with a business intelligence company not too long ago, a big one, and they demonstrated their next platform, and their story was, we want to give 24/7 access to, you know, these very common spatial analysis functions, and we want all knowledge workers to be able to do this. You could run a regression analysis on this, a regression analysis on that, and they were pre-canned. It's the automation of knowledge work, making things easier for people. Number three, the Internet of Things, right? So this is the use and absorption of data that come from low-cost sensors. So we have just massive amounts of data that's being collected. How do you manage it? How do you analyze it? How do you use it to your advantage? Number four, cloud. It's not only reshaping how organizations take advantage of or use infrastructure and provide technical infrastructure, but also how software is licensed, how you subscribe, it's everything, right? So it's cloud. You guys are familiar there. Advanced robotics seems like it's a little bit out of the box for this group, but the part I kept it in here because there's a couple of things that are going on there. With drones fall under advanced robotics, actually, in this study. And the other thing that I would say is that the collateral impact of the work that's going on for self-driving cars is dramatically shaping the spatial industry. Everything from street network data to points of interest to aerial imagery, so much innovation is being poured into the self-driving car market that'll spill over, that we'll take advantage of. It's just worth keeping in here. So again, the point is that when you implement an upgrade, just about every business system is going to drag this stuff with it. And what we've done is we've harvested that capability to deliver our platform that you heard about all day yesterday, right? So it's this comprehensive GIS platform that's taking advantage of providing web GIS that allows you to access data anytime, any place, on any device. You get the picture. I've got 8 shots of espresso in me, so I'm talking too much. Scott's like, "Get the heck off the stage." He's like, "You're taking too long." So there's a turning point with ArcGIS and the platform, that the way that Scott and I sort of describe it. The first turning point is the release of ArcGIS Online. How many people are using ArcGIS Online? Okay, great. So there's ArcGIS Online. That was a total change in the way, you know, it's a transformative technology, and it'll continue to be that, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to dive too far into that for this session. The second thing is that we identified with customers of these common solutions that provide you with initial operating capabilities that we believe should just be part of the platform. So when you buy a GIS or you have a GIS, you can deploy a parcel lookup application. If you have a GIS, you can deploy an elections results dashboard. You don't need to invent it yourself, and you can just deploy it. Eventually, we want you to be able to just deploy it in the cloud with none of your resources. You just light these applications up and go. So what the result has been is we have over 150 apps that we make available as our solutions, and we're adding more to them on a quarterly basis. These apps, there's 3 major component or characteristics I'd like to share before I turn it over to Scott. We have worked really hard to get from you a list of apps that we would develop that actually contribute to the work that you do. So this is Scott and his team collaborate with governments in each domain to figure out exactly what is common and what is a best practice for implementation. They're all configurable, which means that if you need to add something to them, you can. It means if you need to change any aspect of the application, you can do it. But they're configurable, and they're easily deployable. They're free if you're an ArcGIS user. So you don't buy the apps. You go to the solution site and you download them. They have all the documentation you need to configure them and deploy them. And they're completely supported by tech support. They're upgraded on release, which will help you with this RevLock issue that I described earlier. The second major component of this thing is a community of users. So your participation and your involvement is critical to the success of this whole program. You providing feedback to us, you providing feedback to your peers. We make the code available on GitHub. You can download the code, you can extend it, provide it back, and you guys have a process for saying, hey, you know, Julie provided some good code back that we need to incorporate into the core product. We'll do that. So it's sort of an open source environment. And then the last thing would be that we have a network of partners that are totally wired into what we're doing, and they can help with implementation. They take some of them and extend them. They work them into their solutions. If they have a permitting solution, they'll take our dashboard and incorporate it. Again, trying to make it easier for them to stay current with our platform because they take advantage of the release upgrades and whatnot to make it so you have a more sustainable system. Right? So I'm going to pause there before I turn it over to Scott. Who you guys? You're supposed to clap at that point? Like, get the heck off the... Right.
So, are they clapping because even with four shots of espresso, you still did okay time-wise?
Did I do okay? I was worried. Right. I was starting to stress that I went too long.
Yeah. Any questions before we kind of kick it over? No? Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, good. So what I want to do now, as Christian said, is really dive into the specifics of what we're building in the solution. And before I do that, I just want to give you a little bit more context. So as Christian said, we've got a team of 7 or 8 of us that are working in the local government domain and working with specific, what I would call maybe business units, or I wouldn't call them necessarily departments, but business units within a local government to define clearly what we should include in our ArcGIS for Local Government solution. And I'll be quite honest, I mean, our mission is very focused. You know, ultimately, we want to help you deliver maps and apps quickly throughout your organization and really increase the cadence of your delivery. None of you probably have 6 to 9 months to go out and do requirements gathering anymore, and then another 3 or 4 months to do design, and then maybe a year of implementation time. You probably have 6 days, maybe. But probably what I would guess, most of you are working in an environment where you've got stakeholders in your organization that are coming to you with an idea and they're expecting to see results maybe later today or the next day. And that's really the new norm that we're seeing. And because these organizations are so dynamic now, local governments are, and whether those are political changes or policy changes that are happening, your ability to quickly deliver stuff throughout the organization is important. Christian talked a lot about the legacy technology, and so one of the things we obviously want to do is really reduce the amount of time you spend, you know, just maintaining what you have. Years ago, when I was at Oakland County, Michigan, we probably spent 80% of our time, hundreds of thousands of hours annually, just maintaining the systems we had. And how do we kind of pivot that? Even if we make a 10% increase and spend 10% less on support and maintenance, it can have a big impact in the organization. Ultimately, you know, we also want to show you how you can deploy and leverage the information you're investing in. I don't know how many organizations I still talk to where people have trouble, you know, getting access to the assessor's parcel data, or they can't get access to fire incident data to do analysis on demolished structures. And so being able to break down those barriers and provide access to information is important. And ultimately leverage the entire knowledge of the community. As Christian said, we know we can't do this alone. We want to work very closely with you guys to make sure we're building the right solutions and we're reacting to the needs of your organization and ultimately incorporating that into the solution so everyone benefits from it. And then finally, do it within the confines that we know you guys are still operating in. I don't know many GIS shops that have larger staffs than they had a couple years ago, maybe. I mean, things are starting to get better, but I think, you know, the current staff size, budgets, and even technical expertise and the challenges attracting that technical expertise is something that we're kind of in the new norm. So Christian mentioned this a little bit. We've got about 150 different solution offerings, and if you think about them kind of around domain or subject area in a local government, you'll see that they're organized around those areas. We've been spending a lot of time in public works and planning and economic development. The other thing I'll mention too is that, you know, there's also a set of solution offerings for emergency management and water utility organizations or agencies within your local government that work very closely with the content we're providing in the ArcGIS for Local Government solution. And ultimately, if you think about the work our water utility solution team has been doing, our emergency management team, and we all collaborate together to make sure things work together as one comprehensive system. So So we've been at this for a while. As Christian said, we started working on, we didn't really call it that 7 or 8 years ago, ArcGIS for Local Government, but we've been working on these configurable maps and apps for you to really help you leverage your investment in ArcGIS for quite some time. And we've seen more than 500,000 downloads of the solutions themselves since we started. And we average 150 to 200 downloads a day. And we're seeing this having an impact on organizations all across the country. And I just want to highlight a few to kind of get you guys thinking about how you can start to take advantage of the solutions we have. The first one I want to highlight is the work that David Ray has been doing in Roanoke County. So David, had ArcGIS, he had an ELA, but what he wanted to do is modernize his citizen engagement applications or how he shared information with the public. And so David developed a map and app gallery and leveraged one of the solutions we had for that and started getting into this cadence where he was deploying a new constituent engagement application almost every month. And one of the last projects he worked on, he took actually a site selector solution we had to help market market these properties and buildings in his community, and basically we released it on a Friday and he had a prototype working on the following Wednesday. And so that just really shows the kind of cadence that you guys can get into in your organization. And in this case, he really leveraged the solutions he had, not so much to transform the transactional systems he had in his organization, but to extend his reach and start to really improve the services that he delivered to his citizens. Another good example is the work that was done in Banff, Canada. And Steve Nelson in Banff, Canada, when he was there, he was a one-man shop, single shop GIS guy that had a small government ELA but really didn't understand how he could fully leverage it. And Steve took the solutions and he got into this kind of app of the month club where he would take the solutions we had, sometimes just deploy them as is, but then he'd also configure and extend them to meet the specific unique characteristics of Banff, Canada. And if you've ever been there, it's a really beautiful place. They have a lot of unique characteristics, a lot of interesting citizens that have unique needs. And so he was really all about, how do I kind of tune this stuff to meet the specific needs of my citizens and really show that even as a one-man shop, I can really have a lot of impact on the business in my community. And the last one I'll mention to you is John Fell in Dallas County Appraisal District. So John was a little bit different. John decided he works for the Dallas County Appraisal District, and their primary focus is managing the real property role and making sure that they have good parcel maps that line up with that assessment role. And so what John needed to do, though, is move from one of those legacy systems that Christian, he was managing his parcels and workstation, he had librarians set up, and he was producing essentially CAD maps out the other end, and he wanted to modernize that entire process. And so John leveraged one of our solutions that we have for tax parcel data management and used that to transform the way he's managing parcels, and then ultimately carried that forward to a whole new set of tax map books that just came with that solution and a new public access application for citizens in his community. So that's kind of three examples of how folks are kind of leveraging the solutions, maybe to kind of extend their reach or outside the organization, or maybe inside the organization as a small government that just has a single GIS resource, or also someone who's really focused in on a specific use case. So the other thing that we've been really humbled by over the last couple of years is it's not just about people that are taking the content we have and downloading and configuring it, but what we've been really excited about recently is a whole set of communities are raising their hands saying, hey, we have some interesting ideas and we'd like to share that with the rest of the local government community. Everyone saw New Orleans' presentation yesterday? Yeah? So New Orleans is one of those communities. Those guys have some really unique ideas and they're all about paying it forward. So we've worked with them on several solutions. Last year it was photo survey that they showed you guys. Now this year it's Adopta and the Drop Cone application. And so there's a whole group of communities out there that are raising their hands saying, hey, we want to help take some of the unique ideas we have, package them up into a set of ArcGIS configurations, and then make them available to the entire community so everyone can have a photo survey application for their community or an Adopta catch basin application. And so that's been really exciting for us. And I think, when you see the guys in New Orleans, go pat them on the back and thank them, because you too can do that now in your community. So that's really been an exciting part of the work we've been doing. So what I'd like to do now is just kind of dig in and show you guys some stuff. And what I'm going to do is really dive into an area we've been working on this spring. Everyone's heard about the Zika virus and the challenges that people are having. And so one of the things I wanted to do is show you some work we've been doing with mosquito control agencies to help organizations really prepare themselves. And what we found interesting about this work is that talk about an area that had zero technology. We've talked to four or five different mosquito control agencies across the southeast and the southwest, and every one of them we've walked into, their idea of technology is a pad of paper, and, you know, a pad of paper. So, and maybe some really cool technology on the spray trucks they're buying, but that's about it. So what I want to do is, rather than bounce around and show you, you know, a single app here, a single app there, I really want to take a minute and show you how a collection of apps that are delivered now with ArcGIS for Local Government can be configured to solve this larger kind of mosquito control challenge that everyone's kind of looking at. And, you know, you talk to the mosquito control agencies in your community, they're going to go, I'm not that worried about Zika. You know, Zika is just like West Nile, and I'm really worried about this, I'm really worried about that. But most importantly, you know, it's a critical and it's obviously a very important thing in the public right now. And so it's an area that we've been focusing on. So what I'm going to do is just sit down and just kind of take you guys through the solutions we've developed for mosquito control, and certainly ask me any questions as we get going. All right.
But this solution, you can just call it vector control, right?
So the question was, can you just call it vector control? Kind of. The reason why I say kind of is that obviously vectors, there are lots of other types of vectors that some organizations deal with, rats, and their kind of treatment and stuff like that is different. So we are really razored in on kind of the concept of mosquitoes and airborne vectors. All right, so let me jump out, and I'm going to start with kind of the citizen's view or the citizen's window into the mosquito control agency, and how can I as a citizen start to, you know, kind of contribute areas of concern in and around my home potentially. And so what I'm starting with here is a configuration of the crowdsource reporter application that's been optimized for mosquito service requests. And so as a citizen, I can come in either, you know, on my device, maybe when I'm out and about around my lawn or inside the office or inside my home. And ultimately just log in as a guest or sign in with my credentials, and I can see areas of concern that have been reported around my community. And those could be debris within catch basins, I noticed, that may be breeding grounds for mosquitoes, or they could be just actual mosquito activity that I notice in and around my community. So I'm here in Naperville, Illinois, and what I'm going to do is just kind of zoom in to my home and my neighborhood. And instead of just reviewing some of these problems, I actually want to submit a new report. So I can use this application to come in here now as a citizen and say I want to report mosquito population in backyard. Put my name in real quickly. And essentially what I'm doing, right, is kind of like notifying the mosquito control agency of my concern. And you'll see how that plays forward. So, you know, through this process, I can say, you know, am I the property owner? Is there a dog on the property that they should be concerned about? Nope, no restricted access. And you know what? I absolutely want you to treat that if there's a problem. I could also browse to a photo on my desktop if I happen to snap a photo while I'm out in the field. And I think I put one right here. So there's a great photo that I snapped. And ultimately, what I can do now is just either use my current location, enter my address, or just simply poke at the map and report that mosquito control problem. And so now you can see that there is the problem that I reported as a citizen, and it shows up. If my neighbor saw it and was really concerned about it too, they could, you know, vote it up or promote the importance of it. But ultimately, it's a simple way for citizens in your community to submit concerns and start to help drive it. And if you look at many mosquito control agencies or their websites now, what they probably have is either a PDF form that's available on the site, or they have a number you can call in to do that. But ultimately, you know, this helps them kind of organize that work and prioritize it. So moving on kind of down that workflow, then the next thing I want to do is now come inside the organization. So someone within the mosquito control agency is monitoring those requests or taking phone calls, and they're using that to then prioritize the work that's being done in the field. And so I'll just refresh this because we're waiting for that to come back. Wouldn't necessarily be that real time. But what you'll see is when I refresh this application now and when it loads up, I have a list of all of those complaints that have come into my organization. And here is that complaint that we just submitted. And as someone within the mosquito control agency, I can now do a couple key things, right? I want to kind of review this report and see what. You'll see that even though I poked on the map, it actually gave me a reverse geocoded that location and gave me kind of a descriptive address that I can share with the staff. It's got the photo that I submitted, so I can get a sense for what, you know, kind of what's going on in the field. But ultimately, as, you know, kind of an operations manager within the organization, there's a couple things I want to do, right? I want to come in here and mark this thing as received or acknowledge that we've gotten that request. and I'm going to assign it probably to a district that's responsible for treatment in my community. And real quickly go in here and just say, you know what, I'm going to mark that for District 1, and then essentially save that request. Save the request and update it. And now ultimately this now shows up within a work, you know, could be sent off now to workforce, as you guys saw the workforce demonstration the other day, and field workers could now have that assignment and then take action on that assignment, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And then the other thing I have as an operations manager kind of help me stay current on what's going on is a operations dashboard view that allows me to see, you know, how many requests are we dealing with here in my community. And I can see as I update this map, I can see the new requests that have come in my community. I can see what types of requests I'm dealing with, so I can start to get a sense for how do I need to allocate field activities, and ultimately how am I doing resolving those requests that are coming in. Do I have in this case I have a backlog of submitted requests that we haven't taken action on, but ultimately I can use this to start to manage and kind of keep track of what's going on and what the workload looks like for my field workers in my community. And in some communities like Broward County, I think they mentioned they were dealing with like 4,000 requests a week that are coming in through their request system. So the volume, the pure volume of requests is pretty insurmountable for a lot of these organizations that are actively working on this.
How tech savvy do the people who are managing these reports need to be?
So the question is, how tech savvy do they need to be? You can see if I go back to that, essentially they need to be able to interact with a browser. So everything I was working on and just showing you, you know, can be run in a browser. So if they have access to the internet and a browser, they can then interact with those applications. In the case of the service request, this application is actually, while it runs on a desktop device, it's actually optimized for smartphones. And so, you know, what we expect is most people will be out and about with their smartphones, or they can come in to their home and, you know, log in on their computer. But it really is just a browser-based application that people can interact with, and we try to really focus on keeping them simple, for sure. I'm sorry?
I have smart citizens.
Okay.
However, my public works guys that will be taking me for work. Another story.
Everyone takes a shot at the public works guys. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, so we're trying to keep them very simple, right? And so the barrier is browsers. You know, do they have access to a browser? You'll see, can I interact with a big finger? You know, in a minute you'll see kind of what those field activities look like. But yeah, we obviously, that is obviously a challenge, because like I said, most of these mosquito control agencies aren't using any technology now. And so this is just like completely bare earth for them. And that obviously learning curve is a challenge. Go ahead, back here, one more second. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Is there any way I can demo this when I get home?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, yes. So, and then so two things. Your one question was, hey, we're actively monitoring Zika, you know, occurrences maybe at testing locations or surveillance locations or public health concerns. I'm going to show you an app for that in a minute, too. But yes, everything I'm showing you today, which you'll see at the end of this presentation, is available on our solution site. And what I'm actually showing you guys are the Try It Live that are available on the solution site that you guys can go home and show everyone in your organization. And you can play with them, you can try to break them, all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I'm not showing you anything that we cooked up. It's all available for you today. Go ahead. Yeah.
And I prefer if I, on my backyard or in the street, I would just go, you know, browse to the county or city website and then link to a browser that will work on my mobile rather than an application.
Yeah, so the question is, Scott, I understand it works on, I'm paraphrasing, on a mobile device, but I would never download an application. The great thing is you don't have to download this application. This is a responsive mobile application that you would link to from your mosquito control or city or county website. It is not an app you have to go get from an app store. It is that simple. They just literally say, hey, want to submit a request for service? Click on that link and it fires up the mosquito service request application. So it is that simple. And it also then obviously works on any device, whether that be a desktop, tablet, or smartphone device. Any other questions? Okay, you guys have obviously been thinking about mosquito control too. Okay, so what we just covered was, let me switch over now. What we just covered really is, you know, how does that process start, right? How do we start to be more responsive to citizens in our community and ultimately use the feedback, or citizens as a sensor, essentially, in my community to start to prioritize my field activities? I live in a large county. We have thousands of square miles to cover. There's no possible way we can continue to treat us. So the next step in that process really now is, now that I've got those service requests, how do I start to allocate my field workers to respond to them? What typically happens is, you know, they won't just take a service request and then go start spraying. They'll send out someone from the mosquito control agency to actually do a site investigation or conduct some field operations to validate, is there actual adult mosquitoes there, or are they juvenile mosquitoes? What types of conditions are causing that? And so what I'm showing you now is a configuration, two collector maps that have been configured to support those workflows. So now I've kind of switched hats, right? And I'm the field worker who's out in the field, in my truck, on a tablet, let's say maybe a Windows tablet or a Windows PC in the truck, and I now need to record the information that I saw when I was out in the field. And so let's go ahead and take a look at that one that was submitted and received. I've got that one that was just submitted, and here's that one we just sent in, right? So instantly now it's showing up. So if that report came in this morning, and the operations manager said, we received it, we've got all the information, and then assigned it to a district, the guys in the field now can see that instantly. And they'll see all the information that was submitted by the citizen, and essentially what they have now is a whole set of additional characteristics that they capture while they're out in the field. So I was home when they came out, we visited them on the 29th. You better believe that was a justified complaint. I did not find any larvae or juvenile mosquitoes, but I did find adult mosquitoes. Didn't have time to check the landing rate. We've also gone in and started to incorporate. So the other thing we try to do to help you guys get started is take a lot of the industry standards that are out there, standard species for mosquitoes. Let's load them in so you guys can just use them. Standard genus and all that kind of stuff. So all that stuff you'll see is there. I actually left an educational packet for the citizen because he's got a bunch of standing water in the backyard and he's not taking care of his pool. And we're going to go ahead and recommend treatment. Now, in some cases, mosquito control agencies may just actually treat while they're on site. In other cases, they may not. So ultimately, once I'm done with that, I can then just say save. And I've now essentially completed my field inspection for that site. And as I said, if I needed to, if I was going to actually treat the juvenile mosquitoes, I have a map that's also available to me to record that treatment as well, too. And so think of it as my mobile office now as a mosquito control field worker. I've got the information I need to respond to complaints that are coming in, and I have information that I can use to record treatments that I may be applying as I'm going out and about in the field. You got a question? Go ahead. So the question is, does what you're showing me actually mean that we're building a bunch of layers in the local government information model? I'm kind of paraphrasing your question, for mosquito control. The answer is no. We're not building it into that on-premise data model, but what we're giving you is a set of layers or service definitions that you can just clone right into your organization, or just online organization, and spin up these maps. You do not need to deploy the entire local government information model to take advantage of these mosquito control solutions. There's four or five layers that these all work on, this entire collection of apps work on, and that's all you need to get started. Really simple and straightforward. So that's the field worker's view. Go ahead. Yeah, so the question is, we don't have connectivity everywhere, and we like to download and go offline. All I'm showing you is a configuration of collector for ArcGIS that's using the mosquito control information that we organize. So all of the capabilities you have in collector still apply. It is just collector that we're using here. There's nothing new. I'm just showing it to you on a Windows device so I can display it on the screen.
So Scott, I was waiting for a good time to bring this up. But the everything that we're showing, this is a huge concept, and once you get it, it's completely straightforward, but I have found that it's hard to make the leap at the first time. Every single thing that you're seeing is a configuration of a COTS component of the platform. So this is a configuration of collector The dashboard was a configuration of the dashboard. The initial app for the citizens to, you know, self-report is a configuration of the community. Was it called?
Crowdsource reporter app.
Crowdsource reporter app. So one of the things that you can do and that our users are doing with these app templates is that just because we have a park locator on our website, you can download the code, pour different data into it, and it can be a recycle center locator. This can be you get it. So there's nothing custom that is done on these apps. They're all configurations of the base capabilities.
Yep.
So you can take this app and use it as a hurricane debris cleanup map?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've actually got a configuration of collector for that exact thing in our emergency management solution.
So here's what you got to, when we organize this stuff as solutions on our website, here's what we're doing. We're saying, you know what? We've interacted with a lot of government customers who are struggling with, that are trying to figure out how to deal with Zika today.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take our standard capabilities. We're going to go ahead and meet with some customers, find out what they need to do. We're going to do the configuration for them based on best practices and make it available so you don't have to.
Yep.
If you've got staff that can take those same things, take this existing stuff and reconfigure it for something else, that's what it's for.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, Christian, because I've really been focusing on kind of the business value for the applications. But behind the scenes, like Christian said, they're just configurations of our core apps. We're not building new tech and shipping new tech. We're just configuring what we have around those kind of business processes that we see in a mosquito control organization.
So I want to make another point.
Go ahead.
I'm worried that I'm taking up your time.
That's fine. Go ahead.
So here's the
Our time's all blown up anyways.
Okay, so here's another thing. This is just, and I wish that I could say that we were smart enough to have this idea beforehand, but this was like an unintended consequence. So just, I'm going to make some gross generalizations, no tomatoes. For years, the deal has been, look, what are my two or three project priorities for the year at my organization? I'm going to get a group together. We're going to do a needs assessment, a requirements gathering. I'm going to customize these apps, and I'm going to deploy them. Oh, I had three that I wanted to do. They took longer. I got 1.5 done this year. Next year, we're going to do this other one. The unintended but very good consequence of this notion of configure and deploy has completely destroyed that model. And maybe you can already grasp this or understand it, but embracing that opportunity to increase the cadence of deployment for the solutions in your organization, number one. And number two, the ability for you to say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to wait for my city manager or the director of public works to ask me about a Zika solution. I'm going to bring it to them. Maybe not go ahead and completely configure it with your data, but be able to bring to your organizations an election solution, a vector control solution, a comprehensive land record solution, and then configure them quickly and deploy them so that the cadence of what you're delivering as a service, as a GIS group to your organization, completely changes from what your organization has experienced before. All of a sudden, your service delivery has gone up, the perception of innovation has gone up, and the tools that you're delivering to your organization and value of GIS and organization has gone up exponentially. And it flips the whole entire dynamic. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's pretty cool. Yes.
So the question is, what skill set do I need to configure these solutions I'm showing you? We do document that on the solution site. You'll find that. I'll show you in a minute. But in this case, I need to know how to use ArcGIS Online, author layers, author web maps, and configure COTS applications. That's it. So it's very, bless you, very basic ArcGIS Online kind of capabilities, because everything's out of the box. Go ahead.
And what skill set from the base one to something different using the same application, like
Yeah, so the question is, okay, what if I want to take that citizen report, problem reporter, and turn it into a 311 graffiti reporter? Very little, in fact, because we give you a configuration to do that, and you can just pick that one instead of mosquito control. But all of it is using ArcGIS Online, so you're tweaking the layers, you're then authoring a web map to reflect the tweaks you made, and then you're just sharing it with the application. So they all follow kind of a standard pattern, and that's the other thing that Christian kind of mentioned that you guys will see. Because we're providing configurations of the core apps, you'll see that pattern emerge very quickly, and you'll see that, okay, I'm starting with mosquito control in my organization, but now I'm going to go move into asset inventory for the rest of public works. Well, those are just collector configurations too. They just have different layers and a little bit different map. And maybe the folks that are doing the collection are a little different, so I need to talk to some other folks in the organization. But the patterns you'll see emerge across these solutions, the kind of configuration patterns, will be very similar as you guys move through them. Go ahead. So how is the configuration expressed? It's expressed in two ways. One, on the solution site, which I can show you guys in a minute here, it's all documented. So we'll show you how to take those layers that we've defined and configure the, publish them, configure the maps, and configure the applications, and we'll take you through that process start to finish. And it'll just walk you right through it, and you can use it as a tutorial with the sample data, or you can use your data and start to spin it up and deploy actual applications for your organization. There's a couple different ways you guys can do it. And we're actually working on some things later this year, which I'll talk about in a minute to simplify that. So we won't have time to go through the rest of these, but let me just show you kind of what else is available for mosquito control so you can start to get a sense of how comprehensive you guys can be. So we talked about those requests coming in from citizens and the field observations that the staff need to make. The other thing they do in mosquito control agencies is set up surveillance locations throughout the community, and they go out and actually set up traps and start to monitor mosquito populations. If you haven't seen it, right, it's a big jar. They'll set it out for 24 or 48 hours, and they'll still go collect mosquitoes and start to count then, and I mean count, different species that are coming in on those traps. So this population surveillance applications, instead of writing that down or recording it in Excel and not knowing where those counts are coming from, this application allows them to go in and populate those counts directly. And that's important because they want to then communicate that information to stakeholders within their organization and maybe even citizens. So a complementary configuration of that same mosquito surveillance application now allows folks within the organization or citizens now to see historically mosquito populations at each of those traps. And so I just quickly poked on this surveillance observation, and I can see by species exactly what the counts look like over time in my community. The other thing that was mentioned earlier is that health departments or health organizations are interacting with these mosquito control organizations to kind of monitor and track diseases that may be either coming from those traps and those mosquitoes they're catching or other locations throughout the community or maybe through human cases. So another application we have in the solution is a configuration of web app builder that allows the health department now to communicate those health concerns in the community. And you can see that this can be used to communicate, you know, are we having positive tests, you know, in mosquitoes, or in a general sense, because obviously there's a great deal of privacy concerns around that, have we had human cases that have been tested and found as well, too. So this application really is meant for folks inside the organization who are, you know, the health department's monitoring health concerns. They want to communicate that to the mosquito control agency so preventative measures can be taken to mitigate the outbreak as well. So the last thing, the last kind of theme I want to show you is that, okay, I've gone out and done, you know, some field observations based on the feedback that citizens have had. I am monitoring those surveillance locations to watch population trends. I may be also looking at health concerns that are breaking out in my community. And ultimately then, a mosquito control agency will decide to spray. So the mosquito adulticide planning application allows them to do just that. That allows them to look at all of those inputs that are happening in the community and come in here and quickly identify an area in the community that they're going to spray. And then identify the treatment method. Could be an aerial treatment. Many people are using helicopters and planes to apply treatment. Some may be doing it by hand or truck. What district it's in. A planned spray date. Let's say we're going to plan to spray tomorrow. I can also use it to track actual spray dates, which you'll see in a minute. The chemical used, and then just go ahead and identify that. I can also, if I want, as an organization, come in and identify exemptions. So if there's schools we don't want to spray in the area, I can also identify those as well, too. And ultimately, this is a tool for folks inside the Public Works or Mosquito Control Agency to help them kind of lay out their tactical plans for that. And then the last thing I'll mention is that obviously, you know, citizens are concerned about spraying that's going on in the community. They want to know what's going on. And so the last area I'll show you are a set of solutions that kind of help people understand what's being sprayed in their community. And this is a solution called Mosquito Spray Areas. It allows me as a citizen to go in and just enter an address, or perhaps I can poke at the map. and I can see planned spray areas in my community and actual spray areas. So I didn't have a whole lot of information, but just to show how real-time that data can be, this is that spray block I just banged in a minute ago in that adulticide planning application. And it shows the citizens immediately that we have a spraying operation plan for today, tomorrow, and here's how we're going to do it in this area. So I may, as a citizen, want to shelter in place if I have health concerns, maybe go shopping or leave the area, go to the beach for the day. Or finally, I could go to the mosquito control website and formally fill out an exemption not to be sprayed in that area. And so there's a whole kind of collection of apps that help increase transparency with citizens and make sure, allow them to be sensors to help kind of guide the field activities that we're doing, and then ultimately be aware of planned spray areas and maybe actually ask to be exempted from those spray areas as well. So everything I showed you, that was a real quick summary of kind of the mosquito control solutions. Everything I showed you is available on the solution site. And so if you haven't been to solutions.arcgis.com, when you do go there, you'll see that we're building solutions for a whole variety of industries that we serve. We can just drill in specifically to the local government solutions. In this case, today I showed you a whole collection of solutions we've been working on for mosquito control, and they are under Public Works. So everything I showed you guys today is available here on the solution site. And if I poke at managed mosquito populations, you'll see the whole collection of applications I showed you guys. And you can, just like I mentioned, you can go in here and take a look at them, read more about it. You can use those Try It Lives that I was showing you guys earlier today. And then ultimately begin to drill in to the documentation we provide on the solution site that walks you through, okay, that's a really cool app, Scott. I really want to provide that to my citizens. What do I need? So back to the question we had earlier about what kind of expertise do I need in my organization? Here are those kind of four bullets. What software or what part of the ArcGIS platform do I need to configure it? What applications we're using, which gets to Christian's point earlier, they're all just configurations of our COTS capabilities. Those Try It Lives, any release notes, and then we'll start to walk you through exactly how to stand these up in your organization. So it's a really simple, straightforward way for you guys to start to take advantage of the content. And the other thing I'll point out is I showed you pretty quickly today 8 or 9 applications that really address a pretty comprehensive set of workflows across mosquito control, but that doesn't mean you have to deploy all 9 or 10 in your organization. You can take a very, very incremental approach. While they all work together, that doesn't mean you need all 10 to gain value in your organization. You can address very specific needs as you need to. Go ahead.
I worked for a county, and one of the problems that I found was in public works, is there only the unincorporated areas, not the cities. And unlike the health department of government, if I create something like that, how can I, you know, tell someone, hey, you're not building a city?
Yep. Yep. So it's a good question, right? So I'm a county, and I have a series of incorporated cities in my community that provide different services. I was actually just talking last night in the sale room to the guys in Pinellas County about a similar challenge for their 311 application they want to do. And what we talked about is actually having layers that define that geography, that service geography. And then when people place, no one wants to be denied the ability to submit a request, but as that request goes in, they can see that it's been referred to City of Clearwater, and they're now responsible for that. And so how you do that in your organization kind of depends how you want that service delivery model to go. Do you want people just to say, whoop, nope, don't submit it here, contact such and such? Or do you want to take the request, triage it to the right agency? Either way, one of the things that the service request application allows the citizen to do is to come back in and see the status of their request. So I didn't have time to show that to you guys, but all along the way, as that request comes in and it gets marked as received and assigned to District 1, now as a citizen I can come in and see, oh, my complaint has been received and District 1's looking at it. Then after the field worker goes out and does his investigation and updates that information, now I can see some other, treatment's planned, packet was left, all that kind of information. It accumulates over time and is available to the citizen to help with some of those transparency concerns. So, yep, go ahead, yeah.
In relation to that, so the county that I work for has 17 And we're taking a look at a version of this application for like reporting a pothole.
Sure.
And we understand our mayor's directive is that they, regardless of where you are as a citizen, they don't know where the boundaries
right.
are.
Or who the service provider is necessarily,
exactly.
right?
So one of the things that we're preparing to do, we're starting small and we'll grow it, but we're actually going out and meeting with each of the jurisdictions to get the contact information for each of the areas that we'll be doing reporting so that when somebody hits submit, it will just automatically route
yeah.
that to the public works.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, we'd love to talk to you about it because that's exactly what we were talking about with Pinellas last night. And you know, how could I use some other technology like GeoEvent to maybe send that a notice that happened and essentially hand it off to the right agency depending on where that problem is reported and what kind of problem it is. So it'd be great to talk to you about that, yeah?
So if I wanted to customize it, for example, for that controller or something, mm-hmm. do I go to the solution website and start customizing web app builder, collective app, or how do I proceed?
Yeah, so the question is, what if I want to expand this to handle other vectors? You could absolutely go to the solution site, grab those solutions, walk through the process for mosquitoes, essentially. Well, one, I would, you know, identify the solutions that are important initially. But then, yes, you can just start to configure some domains to add those additional problem types. You may configure some of the field operation workflows that may be slightly different and treatments they're applying that are slightly different. But that's all it really will take. It won't take much more than that. Is you're just kind of configuring the information that's available to the users. But my guess is the workflows are probably very similar in terms of the report, the field investigation, and some type of treatment that's applied. So let me just wrap up real quick, and then we'll take questions. Hold on, because we're getting a little short on time. So as I mentioned, I just showed you today 7 or 8 different solutions for mosquito control, and there's a lot of solution offerings out there for you. Ultimately, our goal is to provide you guys an ArcGIS system for your local government that really takes advantage a lot and really addresses a lot of the challenges that we talked about earlier. And like any other system you buy, so this is another key concept that and kind of misconception of the work we've been doing. Many people think we're building an information model. Because Ezra used to do that all the time, right? And we had information models for all kinds of domains. That's not what we're doing. The only reason that local government information model exists is to provide you guys a way to organize your geographic content to deliver the solutions I've showed you today. It's just like any other system you guys would buy. It would have an underlying information model that helps you organize your content. It would have a set of apps that are designed around the key workers within your organization, and then some other information products for the people they serve. That pattern is the same. We're not building an information model with a pretty poster. Okay, we all got that? Okay. As I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different configuration patterns emerge. We've got a session right after this, actually, that's going to drill into this in more detail. The key message here, start with the business requirements in your organization, those key critical needs. Find a solution that helps you address those needs. Configure and deploy that solution, and then incrementally grow. You do not need to take kind of a waterfall approach with this. We intentionally design these solutions so they can be deployed individually to address a specific need or as a collection, like you saw today, to address a larger workflow in an organization. But that doesn't mean you have to deploy everything. You can take a very incremental approach, and we encourage you to do that. And you can do it quickly, like Christian said. I mean, this is not 6-9 months. This is a couple hours in many cases for some of these solutions. So let me just close with, it's not just about that tech, and I really want to drive this point home. This is a participatory sport. The more you guys put into this, the more you'll get out of it. You know, the conference this week is a great way for us to connect and get feedback from you guys, but it's not the only way. All of the content I showed you, you can download from the solution site. You'll find more documentation. We have virtual meetups. Sometimes this week we have one where we're all getting together here at the conference, but every month we have a meetup that dives into the content we're providing in the solution, provides you guys some tips and tricks on configuration. So I'd encourage you to join that meetup and use it as a way to stay connected with what we're doing, to stay connected with your peers, and then ultimately it gives you guys a great way to drive what we're building because we will show you guys some stuff. We'll use it as a way to get feedback, and it's also a great way for you guys to tell us what we're missing. So I definitely encourage you to kind of keep an eye on that. This week, and this is kind of a kickoff session for a lot of different tech workshops we have. We've got seven different tech workshops. Actually, we'll be here. I'll be here basically all day working on different solution and talking about different solution offerings. We've got a lot of demo theaters as well where we're going to drill into specific solutions and maybe, you know, do a deep dive into the election solutions, for example, and show you guys how to configure them. We've got a special interest group on Wednesday that we'll really use to kind of talk about what we've been working on and where we're going. A social on Wednesday evening. And then if you want to really have specific conversations about the solutions we have, come to the Solution Island. We can talk about in a real detailed way. There's guys on the team, guys and gals on the team there that will be able to help you with very, very specific questions you have. And if you're looking for us, just walk in B1, B2. Just remember that door. Just walk in and it's straight ahead. You'll find a bunch of folks that are available to help you. So let me just close with kind of what we're working on. And we mentioned this a little bit. Christian talked about it early on. We have a release, I'd say every 60 to 75 days, at least for a year, I'll say that. Solution releases a year. And those releases include new content that we've been working on. They include enhancements to existing solutions based on the feedback you guys have given us in the community. And we also continuously keep an eye on, you know, ArcGIS. So 10.4.1 is released, make sure all our solutions work on 10.4.1. Pro 1.3 is released, make sure they all work on Pro 1.3. And you guys kind of get the picture, right? So we're continuously evaluating the solutions and making sure they work with the different releases of ArcGIS. And the other thing, on that solution site, make sure you check the versions of ArcGIS that are required. In this case, mosquito control, it's using online, so there really is no impact. In other cases, on some of our desktop solutions, like data management solutions, or maybe some of the other analysis solutions, there may be specific versions of ArcGIS for desktop that is required. So that is important to point out. So you can see June was a big release for us. Mosquito control was just a small piece of it. We did a bunch of work on community events. We've done some enhancements to some of our addressing solutions, which we'll talk about this week, and added some additional offerings in the land records and planning and development areas, too. So some things we're thinking about heading into the second half of this year, and then we can open up and take some more questions in the last couple of minutes we have. One of the things we realize is that for many people, the deployment approach is still too hard. It's too hard and too complicated. There's a lot of pieces that are you have to work together to get it just right. And so one of the things we're really, really focused on over the second half of this year is simplifying that. So how could I, don't quote me on this, but envision, how could I go to the solution site and say, I really like all those mosquito control solutions you showed. I want them. Hit a big button and say, here is the URL to my ArcGIS organization, and it stands up the services, authors the maps, configures the apps, and gives them to you for your organization. And then all you have to do is go in and add your logos, maybe change the titles, or maybe configure the layers to have some specific needs, meet the specific needs in your organization. So we're definitely thinking about how do we simplify that deployment approach and make it easier for folks. At the same time, we're thinking about some new offerings in the area of public safety. We know we still have some more work to do on mosquito control. Even though we tackled a big part of it, we haven't hit everything. And there's some other areas. And you guys saw the Adopta solution that we've been working with New Orleans on yesterday in the plenary. We're going to ship that so everyone can do those same workflows as well, too. And then at the same time, we're always incorporating additional platform offerings and taking the feedback we're getting from the community and driving that in. So that's really, at a high level, what we've been thinking about for the second half of this year. And as we get further into the kind of late summer, we'll have a meetup where we really lay down, here's exactly what we're working on and kind of the sense for when we're going to have it available so you guys can start to use that feedback to align with your implementations. Because what I hate to see happen is have you guys go off and build some really cool stuff and then have us drop a solution that may be close but not exactly what you're doing. I'd rather be very transparent about what we're working on so you guys can raise your hands and say, hey, we've been thinking about something like that too. Can we work together and maybe come up with something that works for me and the rest of the community? And that's really the important part about that. So in closing, we really think that, you know, ArcGIS for Local Government provides a roadmap for that basic standard GIS capabilities that Christian talked about. Every organization should be able to take advantage of what we have and have it as a basic capability in their organization. We want to improve the service delivery and kind of project that image of innovation that helps you expand your reach within the organization. The other thing, part of that is, right, it's about taking care of that work that just you should just have in your JS capabilities so you can go after those innovative things in your organization. So allow you to focus on those complex or unique solutions in your organization. We know that it'll save you time and money, not only on the deployment side, but also as you begin to address some of the support and maintenance issues that everyone has, and then ultimately help you expand the reach of your GIS offerings throughout your organization. You may have never even thought about doing stuff for mosquito control. They were just this little, small, sleepy department in the public works group or, you know, divisions, public works. But now you can walk out and say, hey, Zika's coming, or everyone's talking about Zika. Should we tackle this mosquito control issue? So thanks a lot for coming today. You know, if you would, take some time to fill out the survey, give us some feedback. We do use that to kind of pivot the discussions from year to year. And ultimately, here's kind of a link to the solution site. If you don't know where that you are, you can Google it. The meetup site as well, too. The Twitter handles. And ultimately, if you do want to configure, download, and kind of customize the apps, you can find all those on GitHub as well, too. And that's all available on the solution site. So if you kind of land on the solution site, you can get everywhere you need to go. So we got a few minutes. We can certainly take questions. Go ahead. Actually, or we may. Go ahead. Yeah. So the question is, where's the best place to offer suggestions and edits to the data model? You can use ideas for that and submit questions through ArcGIS Ideas. You can also do that through some of the meetups when we're talking about specific topics. Like if we're talking about mosquito control, for example, in one of the meetups, and that's, you know, you don't see some things, but those are probably the two primary ways. By default, you can always hit us up with an email too. That works too. Yep. Go ahead.
Can you mention a little bit about what that civic, there was an open data civic.
Yep. Yeah, so you saw the LA Hub demonstration yesterday. That's really what that civic switchboard concept is. It's kind of evolving open data beyond just the data to a collection of apps that are part of that offering, and to kind of help everyone realize the LA Hub vision, where it's not just the data, it's the data plus the apps. It's kind of an engagement opportunity for people that want to maybe author their own apps from the data they find in open data. So it's really taking that concept further. And obviously, we've worked on a lot of citizen engagement apps across the solution. So how do we make those available out of the box in that open data environment? Yep. Other questions?
Well, one interesting pivot that I'd like to mention.
Hold
on, can I just
grab it? Oh, yeah, because you've got to roll to the next. Yeah.
Is that, you know, often when I talk to customers or governments and I say, you know, what are you doing with GIS? They'll say, well, I'm a server user.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an online user. I've got desktop. I think we need to pivot that. I think that instead of thinking about technology, the way that we should think about our GIS implementations is achieving these business solutions in your organization. So actually, this is what you should be delivering in this ever-evolving list as capabilities for your organization. So when you're trying to think about your GIS maturity, like how mature is my county GIS, my city GIS, how does it map against providing these core capabilities?
Yeah. Yeah, so level of maturity is not I have 32 ArcGIS server deployments
for the past
and 200 desktops that I have to worry about moving every time we release a patch or a, right. It's about have I deployed a collection of apps and reached into the organization deeply.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, I do have a server deployed, and it's possible to publish those layers there rather than RDS online. How difficult is it to configure?
Yeah. So the question is. You talked a lot about ArcGIS Online, Scott, but I do have an on-premise implementation. Can I use those layers? Absolutely. And on the solution site, there's a topic that says, how do I download and configure those layers and deploy them into my organization? So you can absolutely do it. I should have used the term an ArcGIS organization more appropriately. But in that case, do you have portal running or just server?
Just server.
Okay, so that's okay, though. Right? So I'll, instead of publishing hosted layers, I'll publish those layers to my ArcGIS for server implementation. Share them with my organization, author the web maps, author the apps, the content will just flow right to my server. So no problem. No problem there at all. Go ahead.
I'm a user, and I develop some of the apps, mm-hmm. and using some of those things. But my kickback is from my IT department.
Okay.
They don't want to, we have all the latest technology, they don't want to take us there.
Okay. Well, when I was at Oakland as that IT guy, I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? Because if the IT department's not delivering service, then they'll be out of business soon. So you could wait them out. That's one strategy. But absent that.
And wait for my GIS guy to retire.
Right, exactly. So there's that strategy. The other strategy I used in the past is just go to the operating department. So I would be sitting there with the director of mosquito control, whoever that person is, or the public works director, saying, look, we have a GIS system that can help you solve these challenges. If the IT department's going to say no to them, then there's bigger problems. Then you just keep going up the list, I guess. Who does the IT director talk? Right? There's organizational politics, for sure. But honestly, there's no magic bullet for that. That's all about organizational politics and kind of what works. But honestly, you know, if the IT organization is an obstacle, it'll be a challenge for them in the future. So they have to transform. They have to. And in many cases, I've seen the GIS group be that change agent, right? Because we are generally so user-focused as an organ. And somewhere along the way, Christian alluded to this, we lost our focus. Instead of talking about cool maps and cool analysis we did, we started talking about bricks and mortar. Oh, I have servers, I have desktops, I have that. We kind of lost our way a bit. But kind of pivoting that conversation and aligning with those business units will help, I think, a lot with that for sure. So, sorry, I don't, without knowing the specifics in your organization, it's hard to give you the magic bullet on that. Go ahead.
You said the deployment is still very complicated, and I agree. There's mm-hmm. a lot of little things that we got to do to make it work.
Yep. Easy to pull the easy button. So it's going to be this fall. It'll be there are a couple of things we're working on. One is some tools to help you guys configure those layers that are in the service catalog. So I know we give you a starting point with those layers, and you can clone them into your organization, and you could download them and customize them. That completely works now. But we actually want to give you some tools where you can just configure the service right there. So maybe you want to add a couple fields, change some aliases, modify some domains. You ought to be able to do that right from inside, let's say, Pro, for example, and just do it directly there. And then we're working on those easy buttons now. It'll be fall, though, before we have something probably tangible to show. We've just got to figure out how we do it. Actually, it's not so much how we do it. We know how to do it. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of ArcRest, which is a set of scripts that you can use to automate stuff into your portal. That's all doable now. And we could give you guys a Python script to stand up everything in your organization. But that's... I can't do that. I'm not a Python developer. So I want something easier. I want either some kind of web page or something within your desktop deployment that allows you to just say, pick the stuff from the solution site and put in the URL to your organization, and it takes care of the rest for you. So it's we're still trying to figure out how we deliver it. Is it a website? Is it available right on the solution site? Is it something we deliver in Pro maybe that uses a toolbox or something? We just haven't figured that out yet. But that's what we're thinking about. Go ahead.
Is there any advantage to us to have an ArcGIS portal for ArcGIS in addition to supplement our system on organization stuff?
So,
Can we give a department more autonomy in how they would configure it if I've got a portal?
Well, in the local space, so the question is, what's the pros and cons kind of a portal versus online? And I think, in my experience, a lot of that depends on the security concerns inside the organization. Obviously, Portal allows you to take those capabilities of online and bring them inside your firewall and essentially wall things off if you need to. And we see that in emergency management sometimes, not always, but sometimes. And we see that in utilities a lot that are more protective, I'll say, right, of their content. And in some cases, we've seen organizations kind of manage their transactional environment in Portal and then have an ArcGIS organization that they push data out to for the public. Kind of like the old model of I have an ArcGIS server in my DMZ and I have one inside my firewall and occasionally I push stuff out. Similar concept. So I really think that's just a personal preference. A couple cautions. I mean, obviously administering a portal in your organization is going to take server admin time. The other thing to keep in mind is that from our side, the product side, you see improvements and enhancements hit ArcGIS Online first. Then they come back into Portal into a subsequent release. So some of the new applications, let's say, for example, right? Let's say we build a new web app template, or a really good example is we just worked on a whole new set of widgets for Web App Builder, the Smart Editor widget. I forget, there's a couple of them we released in this release and some enhancements. Those always hit ArcGIS Online first, and then they make their way into a subsequent Portal release. So you just have to keep that in mind as you're kind of thinking about what's right for your organization. That's it. So I see a lot of mixed environments still, a lot of mixed environments, and that's perfectly legit. So I know you guys, I certainly can stick around. If you guys have other questions, I can take them. Go ahead.
How about data validation
Mm-hmm.
Is that built into this app?
So the question is, what about data validation? Is stuff streaming in through the Citizen Reporter application? That's exactly what that manager application is kind of meant to be, is the traffic cop that people can... So that's one simple way, right? The simple way is, as an operations manager, I can see this stream of requests coming in. I could even use that same application to enter in requests that are coming in by phone, and I have a central kind of focal point where I can act as the traffic cop, and I can say, yep, that's a good report, so, you know, send it out to District 1, or nope, it's not, I need additional information, and I make a note. So that's at an application level or organizational level what that's for. We've also seen people use GeoEvent to do some of that, to fire off automated requests. So maybe I want to automate the assignment completely. If you submit a request, take a look at what district it's in and automatically put it in that district's queue. So you guys will just have to decide kind of what's right for your organization, but that's some of the key things. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't also wire up some data validation, data reviewer checks on that stuff too if you wanted to. What you'll also find is that we try to be very precise with the schemas to mitigate a lot of that. So critical information goes into domains. We set domains up for a lot of those fields. Some fields are required, some aren't. And you can play with that as well, too, to kind of improve the overall quality of your content as you need to. So, did that answer your question? Okay. All right, so I can stick around. Go on, why don't you guys come on, because we got to get ready for the next session. But thank you very much for coming.